Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Lake Jackson. It's my home and Dr. Paul's home, and we're happy to have you here. Special thanks to all of our supporters for the Ron Paul Institute. We really appreciate all of you, and we had a nice time last night with you. I also want to say welcome to the over 1,000 people that are watching us online right now. That's tremendous. Talk about technology helping us spread the message. It's just amazing. So that's wonderful. I want to thank the Mises Institute especially. This was Jeff and Lou's idea to do something down here. Dr. Paul and I wondered if anyone would come out to our little hamlet down in Lake Jackson, but you all did, and we're happy. And it was such a delight and such a pleasure to work with Jeff and the Mises Institute, and they have a wonderful staff. It runs like clockwork, so it's a joy. And you know, it's great to work with the Mises Institute because we have so much overlap in a way. People say Mises does economics, we do foreign policy. A lot of people say, oh, Ron, I love your economics, but I hate your foreign policy. Those on the progressive left might say, I love your foreign policy, can't stand your economics. But Jeff said it much better than I could. They are intertwined. The Fed enables the wars that we fight, and the wars that we fight enable the Fed. So it's very important, I think, that people understand the package that we have. The Ron Paul Institute is in its fourth year. I'll be very brief about it. People turn to us in times of crisis in very large numbers, which is what we wanted to do when we started it. Dr. Paul and I did a show on Wednesday on the Ron Paul Liberty Report, right after the news hit about the Syrian so-called chemical attack. That show that we did immediately went viral, with now well over 200,000 views of the show. We put the show up on our Facebook page, and a million people looked at it immediately. So it's really incredible what you can do. And we work hard into both the print media, and we have a little studio down here in Lake Jackson where we can do our daily show, and we can also do our media hits. So it's times of crisis like this that we're happy that people will turn to us for an alternative from what you've heard the mainstream media's chorus. I'm going to do something a little different just for a minute, and I think it's almost a sort of a poetry. I'm going to just simply read the headlines from today's antiwar.com and just ponder and think of every one of them for a second as I read them. Hawkish Dems cheer Trump attack on Syria. Tomahawk maker Raytheon fuels defense sector rally. 45 times Trump said attacking Syria was a bad idea. Lawmakers say proof lacking before Trump bombed Syria. Lacking Syria plan, U.S. threatens more strikes. Syria, U.S. missile attack killed 9 civilians. Huh. Is Assad to blame for the chemical weapons attack in Syria? Syrian rebels call for more U.S. attacks. U.S. says Russia responsible for Syria gas attack. Russia cuts military communications with U.S. over Syria attack. Russian Prime Minister, U.S. attacks in Syria, one step away from Russia clashes. ISIS kills dozens of civilians fleeing Mosul. And finally, U.S. considers putting nukes in South Korea. So that's just a random, and it tells you where we are. It tells you the mess we're in. We've talked about the strikes, the 59 Tomahawk strikes at a cost of $1.5 million each, fueling the defense sector rally in the markets. But this was not the first U.S. strike on Syria. As a matter of fact, it was the 7,899th airstrike on Syria from when President Obama started in late 2014. So this didn't begin yesterday. Circumstances around it made it more dramatic. Did Assad gas the people in this village in the Homs area the other day? Well, we don't know that he did. We don't know that he didn't. If he did, it would have to be one of the most reckless acts or an act of insanity, probably from any leader in history. Judging on past behavior, and this is certainly no praise for him, does he act like a madman? He's been able to helm his country in a war against almost impossible odds, where jihadist rebels that were backed by Saudi Arabia and Turkey and other countries, the U.S., were determined to overthrow him. Yet, in a very cool and calculated way, he developed alliances with Iran and with Russia and was able to beat them back. Hardly seems the motion of a madman or someone very reckless. He was on the verge of winning the war. It was literally days before peace talks were supposed to begin for a political solution. And less than a week after, the White House said, Assad can stay. It's up to the Syrian people to choose their own president. So in these circumstances, he was fighting al-Qaeda in the area in Idlib. Would he launch a chemical attack and kill a few groups of civilians? It doesn't make sense. Maybe he did. We won't know, probably. But you have to ask yourself, as in any crime, who benefits? Is there any way conceivable that Assad benefits from doing this? He risks alienating his two allies that have literally saved his bacon in Syria. He risks being Gaddafi'd in the end. Is it good for him? I don't see how it is. ISIS and al-Qaeda, on the other hand, were on the ropes, ready for defeat. Did they benefit from this? Well, they certainly cheered it, and immediately after the missiles hit, they started moving on some villages in the area where the strikes were and took advantage of it. A couple of other points I want to make before we get to our panel discussion. I think the China factor is important, and I think it was David, or perhaps it was Representative Massey who mentioned, the missile strikes were launched as President Trump was having dinner with Chinese Premier Xi. They were sitting down to dinner as the missiles flew. If that wasn't intended to send a message to both China and particularly North Korea, I don't know what was. I think that may have been the real target, and I think that might have been why we didn't see a lot of damage. The Russian reaction. This is probably what I worry about most today. The Russians have not backed down. They've stood by Assad. They've said there's no evidence. We know the last time we thought it was Assad, it turns out, at least according to Carla Del Ponte, the UN inspector, she concluded it was probably the rebels. We almost went to war then. Believe it or not, Obama was sane enough not to do it. But I want to talk a little bit about the Russians, and I'm just going to quote very, very briefly, because Prime Minister Medvedev is not known as a fire breather. He is almost considered to be too liberal. He's no Putin, let's put it that way. This is what Medvedev, a very quiet man, said yesterday. That's it. The last remaining election fog is lifted. Instead of an overworked statement about a joint fight against the biggest enemy, ISIS, the Trump administration proved they will fiercely fight the legitimate Syrian government in a tough contradiction with international law, without UN approval, in violation of its own procedures, stipulating that Congress must first be notified of any military operation unrelated to aggression against the U.S., on the verge of a military clash with Russia. Nobody is overestimating the value of pre-election promises, but there must be limits of decency. He seems to know our Constitution better than Trump does. So what's next? We're back to the beginning. I think we are in big trouble right now. I think maybe we all feel the tension in the room. I think we're potentially on the verge of something cataclysmic. As I said, Moscow said we are one step from war with the U.S. And what did Trump say today? Quote, this is on Drudge, I'd hit Assad again, is what he said. So the idea that Assad did this because he's simply crazy, I'm starting to wonder if Trump did what he did because he's simply crazy. So maybe the shoe's on the other foot.